It's the Mixed Martial Arts Hour with
The Mixed Martial Arts Hour is back in your life on this Monday, July 25th, 2011. And yes, the beard is still here, my friends. Still going strong. I was eating some ice cream on a hot Saturday afternoon, and I realized that the ice cream was dripping on my beard, and then my beard got very hard as a result, and I must say I liked it. It was nice. It felt good. I felt like a real beard wearer. So
it's a win for the beard there.
It is a win for the beard. So it's still going strong. We'll see how much longer, but I know you were all very upset, and even the Vancouver Canucks themselves blamed their loss in Game 7 to the Boston Bruins on my decision to shave my beard. So I brought it back, and perhaps ill-advised on, you know, this hot summer. But hey, what are you going to do? I like it. So we have a great show for all of you. Great start there. Good to be back with Josh and Javier. As I mentioned on Twitter yesterday afternoon, it's a shorter version of the MMA Hour. Not really. It's still an hour and 40 minutes. I tried to keep it to an hour, and there's so many people I want to talk to on the show, so it's actually going to be an hour and 40 minutes, not our usual 2+ hour show. Why? I have to go to the Brazilian consulate in Midtown Manhattan to pick up, hopefully, my completed visa so that I can go and cover UFC 134 in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Did you know that, Josh? Did you know I'm going to Brazil?
No, I had no idea. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, I am going there end of August. Can't wait. UFC's return to Brazil, so hopefully I completed everything correctly. I'm going to pick it up, and I have to go between a certain block of time. That's why I have to cut the show a little early, so I hope you'll forgive us. But next week we'll be back with the same old two-hour show. I'll tell you who will be joining us in studio next week a little later on. Who will be joining us today? Well, we've got a great show for you. A little later on, we'll be joined by the prodigy, BJ Penn. He'll be joining us on the show once again to talk about a whole host of things, including fighting Carlos Condit at UFC 137. We'll also be joined by MMA Fighting's Mike Chiappetta. He'll talk to us about Fedor versus Hendo, Bellator, UFC, a lot of things to discuss. Alistair Overeem, that story just took a turn into crazy town after Alistair was on our show last week. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll also be joined by Jorge Rivera, who faces Alessio Sicara at UFC 133. And one of the most requested guests in our history, Burt Watson, the babysitter to the stars, as Joe Rogan calls him, the UFC's director of fight operations, the guy behind the fighters, behind Dana White, all those guys. You've definitely heard him. You've definitely seen him. A very popular figure, one of the hardest working men in Zuffa, will be joining us on this show. Finally got him on the show. And to start things off, do we have him first and foremost?
He called us. He's just going to be calling back to our studio number.
All right. Well, our first guest today is Brian Ebersole, who faces Dennis Hallman at UFC 133. And what a few months it's been for Mr. Ebersole, because as you may recall, he stepped in on short notice to fight Chris Lytle at UFC 127 in his adopted home country of Australia back in February. Carlos Condit got injured. Ebersole steps in and beats Lytle. And then he signs to fight Dennis Hallman. And due to all the injuries, Rich Franklin, Nogueira, all that stuff, he's now on the pay-per-view. And he's in America now. UFC 133 is less than 2 weeks away. And Brian Ebersole, one of the great stories of 2011 in the UFC, a longtime veteran of the sport, kind of a quirky character, a great guy, finally getting his shot in the UFC. Joining us now? And he is joining us on the line for the very first time. Pleasure to be joined by Mr. Brian Ebersole. Brian, how are you?
Yeah, good, Ariel. How are you today?
It's a pleasure to have you on the show, Brian, and we've wanted to have you on for a long time. And I know you've been kind of keeping quiet, not a lot of media for you leading up to this fight. Why did you decide to go that route?
It wasn't totally by choice. I mean, I was on the undercard, so I didn't have a whole lot of requests. I did a couple, like email interviews where I wrote a big poem and had a bit of fun a couple weeks ago. I've done a few videos from Tiger Muay Thai and from Melbourne at my training camps. And then I just recently got bumped up to the pay-per-view, so then all the media requests started coming in, but it's too close to the fight, so I've actually turned down a lot of media.
Wow, I'm surprised in the sense because you've been working for this moment for so long. Like I said, longtime veteran, and now it's your second UFC pay-per-view fight. So I figured that you'd want to sort of enjoy the moment. But I can understand, a business comes first, right?
I'm absolutely enjoying the moment in silence. I mean, I got a fight with the scale on the 5th of August, and then I got a fight with Dennis Allman on the 6th. So I got a bit of work to do. I just landed in the U.S. and I'm just trying to get acclimated to the weather and things, and the time zone, obviously. So, and to be fair, I don't really have much to say until post-fight to all the other media outlets.
Now, you're in Los Angeles now, correct?
I'm in Hollywood. Yes.
Why did you go to? Why are you going from Australia? Obviously, it makes sense geographically, but what's in LA that's keeping you there for the next week or so?
I was originally looking to do my training camp in San Jose, California, back at AKA. Back in June, I was going to head over. But everyone was injured, so it was a bit of a dead house over there. And I stayed in Melbourne. I knew my opponent was Dennis Hallman, so I was able to get some really good black belt grapplers and things like that, and I figured I could suit my specific needs for this fight in Melbourne. And instead of coming to San Jose on this leg of the trip, I came to Hollywood because I got two former Frank Shamrock team members that live out here. So I'm just hanging with them and doing my workouts alongside a couple of the guys that I'm familiar with.
Now, I'll never forget, Brian. I mean, your story when you made your debut back in February in Australia, it was a wonderful story. You stepped in on short notice, then you beat Chris Lytle, an amazing performance, fight of the night. And then I remember getting the opportunity and the privilege to talk to you after the fight, and you were very emotional. There were a lot of people who stuck by you for many years, including your family, and you talked about them and you thanked them. And you were obviously very emotional talking about the whole situation and the journey to get to this point. How has your life changed since you beat Lytle and are now, a firm member of the UFC welterweight division?
I think that's the only change in my life, really, is that I'm a firm member of the UFC welterweight division. Knowing that I have a contract that'll be honored, and knowing that I have notice for fights in a professional organization that's going to put those fights out in the public view, that's really the biggest change. As far as training and lifestyle, everything's pretty well been the same.
Did you notice, and you've been around the fight game for a long time, did you notice people starting to come up to you, other managers, sponsors, things like that, now that you fought on a UFC pay-per-view and you're fighting on one again, just people coming out of the woodwork who might have ignored you a year or so ago, now wanting a piece of the pie?
Not really. I haven't had too many people. As far as the piece of the pie thing, it's been more seminar requests, which is a good thing. So the UFC debuts really helped my profile as a coach, especially in Australia, being one of the few guys with UFC credentials over there. And two of the bigger name guys that are over there, Noak and Soteropoulos, they don't really live in Australia. And when they do come back, I don't really think they're interested in teaching. I think they want to see their family and friends. So I kind of got a bit of a market over there to myself at the moment.
That is a good situation to be in. And I'm wondering, that was actually my next question. Because you're now in the UFC, because there are a lot of great fighters in the U.S., in Canada, you mentioned you've obviously spent time here. You are American. Did you think about leaving Australia while you're making this UFC run just to have better training partners, sparring partners, and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a consideration when it comes to trying to find wrestlers to challenge me. I'm going to have to come to America to do that. And I looked at a couple different camps. And made a few plays and thoughts and considerations back, like early May when I first knew I was going to fight in August. But in the end, I brought out Heath Sims and Jesse Taylor from Team Quest to provide that wrestling component for a few weeks. And then again, just got onto the grappling side of things. In the future, I think I will spend a bit more time training in America, but I'm not sure how that's going to come about. I think I'm still going to be a bit of a nomad and follow the sport like I have for a while. I've got a lovely Australian girlfriend that's willing to travel with me for a little while. So her and I are going to sit down and make some plans and try to live out, like a 4 or 5 month kind of plan at a time. And, see where this whole ride takes us.
I have a bone to pick with your girlfriend, Brian.
I do, too, actually.
Yes, well, maybe it's the same bone. I saw a video online, and I must admit, I like people with character. I like people that, are a little different. And your famous chest hair, the arrow, which I believe it's pronounced the harrow, correct?
It's been called the Harrow. Yes, it has.
There was a video that appeared a couple of weeks ago of your girlfriend sort of being the mastermind behind this plan to shave your wonderful chest hair. And I'm actually, while we're talking here, I'm playing the clip in case people haven't noticed it. You're in the gym. You're rolling, and then your friends, your quote-unquote friends, jump you. She jumps on you.
Quote-unquote friends. You said it.
Exactly, and they shave it. How could she – I mean, if she really loves you, if she really cares for you, she has to know that this is a great marketing tool. Why the heck would she shave it?
It was about 10 or 11 weeks before the fight, so this was a few weeks ago, and she kept it in her back pocket. You know, it was pretty interesting. She told me after the Lido fight, after about 2 weeks, I showed the Harrow as often as I could. And had a good laugh with it. And even in public, you know, people would be all, nice fight. You still have the Harrow. So I'd lift the shirt and have a laugh. And she told me once that she was going to shave it. She was, I'm going to get rid of that thing if you don't. And I told her, I'm going to try to keep this Harrow, you know, as long as I have a winning streak. You know, kind of having a laugh. And I go, you're going to have to put up with it. So, you know, when I told her that, she got a bit stubborn with me and said, I'll shave it if you don't. She dropped it. Never said it again for a couple weeks. And, on the day, just a bit of a boom was dropped on me, and it was gone. But thankfully, she left me long enough time to grow back my patch, and now we've got this little Middle Easy contest. So I've actually left the next design in the hands of a ridiculous fan, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to have some embarrassing on my chest on August 6th.
So the fans are going to come up with it, so it's not going to be the Arrow unless the Arrow wins.
Unless the Arrow wins, I don't know, maybe they'll, like, do something like curve the Arrow, like, over my shoulder. That way it points the punches a little bit further from my chin, because I've had a few close calls. So, we'll see what happens.
So, I think you were messing with our emotions here, at least the fans of the Arrow, because you only posted this a couple weeks ago, so I thought that this actually happened a couple weeks ago, but you're saying...
Well, that's half the story is, you know, she was a bit cheeky in saying she was going to shave this thing off me. And she let it die down and got me when it was least expected. I was sitting there filming a workout with my camera, and she ended up taking advantage of that situation and used it. And she took the camera and hit it. So I'm waiting eagerly for this video to surface, in 3, 4, maybe 4.5 to 5 weeks go by. And I forget about it. And then one day I start getting inundated on Facebook with all these messages laughing and being ridiculous. And sure enough, she just threw the video up unexpected, just kind of out of the blue when I least expected it. So I got to give her a little bit of credit for being half ninja and half funny.
You seem genuinely upset. Were you really mad at her? Did this create like a fight between you two?
No. Only for makeup sex, if anything.
Okay. But
no, there was definitely no major hostility. Like I said, I knew I had time to grow another one, and she wouldn't have done it had she not known that my manscape abilities would be restored.
So and I like the fact that you have embraced social media. This morning I get an email from you, and you posted a new video. You're at Tiger Muay Thai, and you're looking for someone to sort of execute your famous cartwheel kick.
Takes grace and it takes balls, Ariel.
I
have to go all the way to Thailand to find someone with that unique mix, that unique combination of both.
Now, I'm playing this clip now. I fast-forwarded through the part where you get all your training partners to try it. And then you get
this... The non-believers.
Yeah, the non-believers, so to speak.
The blasphemers, yes.
And then you get a woman to do it, and she actually pulls it off quite well. Now, this is a joke, right? I mean, the censored thing, she's...
Well, I've traveled the world as a coach, and I've done some pretty good things. In South Africa, I think I've inspired a few kids to stay in the gym, stay in school, and stay off the streets. In Australia, I've taught wrestlers or kids how to wrestle that had no idea what wrestling was. And, now in Thailand, I think I've found a bit of a unique niche. And I'm hoping I can transform a few of the feminine type into legitimate threats in the Thai boxing ring. So I'm hoping to see a ladyboy land a cartwheel knockout one of these days in Thailand and hopefully get a bit of a coaching credit on that one.
So was that, in fact, a real ladyboy?
Well, it was censored for a reason.
Well, I don't know. You could censor it and then just sort of pretend that it's a ladyboy.
No, that was absolutely, yes.
Oh, my God.
Authentic.
Wow, that is unbelievable. How old?
Yeah, people talk about, Thailand, and Tiger Muay Thai being a bit of a tourist place and this and that. But as far as I can tell, it's quite authentic, and the training is real, and the athletes are real. So
that is mind-blowing. I've never seen a lady boy. I don't want to ever see a lady boy. How old do you think he she was? She
looks maybe 19.
Wow. Weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, he looked young.
So that is the correct thing to say, he, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the feminine aspect was fairly new, fairly recent.
Horrible. Horrible, Brian. All right, let's talk about Dennis Hallman, another veteran of the sport, a guy who is on his own run in the UFC and has looked very good as of late. We haven't seen him for a bit, but has looked very good as of late. What are you expecting to see from him?
He's going to be a fairly tenacious guy. Apparently, he's got his cardio sorted, and he's been attacking people fairly well. And if he gets on top, he's got a pretty good top game. So. I expect, one of the better Dennis Hallmans we've seen, again, especially after he's getting used to his new diet and his new body. So, I don't know. Hopefully I can handle the new and improved Dennis Hallman.
It sounds like you've done your research, because after his last fight, he talked to us, and that was in November, 123, after he beat Caro, saying that he found out that he had celiac and had to change his diet, meaning he was sort of allergic to gluten, wheat, and things like that. It didn't really agree with his stomach, and all of a sudden now he's a new man. That's a pretty unique story. I haven't heard a lot of fighters talk about something like that, and it sounds like you believe that that's changed his cardio and his career, right?
Well, he believes it, so that's really what matters. And he didn't look all that bad in round three against John Howard and Ben Saunders. He looked like just a normal guy. He didn't seem to have the major problems that he had, in his younger career. I remember watching some of his earlier UFC fights. I know the Jens Pulver fight was five rounds, and that's just hard on anybody, especially with him being, I think, at lightweight for that one. Like I said, it sounds like he's got a few things dietary corrected. And, anytime you have something that doesn't agree with you as far as lifestyle, it's going to affect you. So pretty sure, like I said, it had a major effect, and we're going to see an improved athlete.
I believe this is your first fight in the United States since 2007, correct, when you fought for the IFL? What's that going to be like for you? Are you going to have a lot of family, people that maybe hadn't had an opportunity to watch you over in Australia, come and see this fight in Philly?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have a few hometown folks. I got three wrestling coaches coming out. I got a couple people from Australia. So all three of the people that cornered me at UFC 127 from Australia are going to be there. Two of them will be in my corner. We got some family, some friends coming out. So it's going to be quite interesting having that surrounding, I guess, pre and post fight. But I had that in Sydney, to be honest. I had a lot of people that I've coached for, trained with, from all around the country. A lot of the tickets in Sydney actually are sold from outside of the state that Sydney's in. So, I had a lot of people that knew me at that fight, but this one's going to be a bit special, like I said, with my real inner circle, kind of a lot of people from my past coming out to support me.
Are you hearing any talk of the UFC returning to Australia later this year? There were some rumors of that.
I don't know. I'm going to ask when I get there, because I'm fairly well putting my money on the fact that they're going to hold a February show in Sydney again.
Right.
If they don't, that kind of throws a wrench into what would have been my travel and training plan. I'm hoping this is my last fight until February back in Australia. So,
yeah, obviously that's a fight that you want to a card that you want to be on close.
Absolutely.
To home.
Yeah. I'm gonna spend the entire winter back in Illinois, volunteer coaching my high school wrestling team, and just taking a bit of a holiday. So I'll be training. But I prefer not to have to train full on until, the turn of the year, and then have a fight, like I said, February in Sydney would be ideal.
All right. So, we can expect a crazy, chest hair style, something, and fans can, they can submit their entry at MiddleEasy.com, correct?
They can. The men have to shave it into their chest hair. The women can throw it on their nether region.
Wow.
And, MiddleEasy said they're going to PG 13 all of the submissions due to possible graphic content before they display them to the public. But I haven't kept track of any of the entries. That's all going to the folks at MiddleEasy, so I'm well in for a surprise.
Well, we like them very much. Check that out. Can we also expect a cartwheel kick? You threw a couple of those in the Lytle fight, and now it's sort of like your finishing move. It's like the rock bottom or the people's elbow. If you're a fan of pro wrestling, when Brian Ebersol fights, we want to see a cartwheel kick. Can you guarantee that for us?
I'm pretty sure I'll walk on my hands for at least a brief moment at some point in this fight. Yes.
Nice. And it does in fact work. There are some people who just think it's for the show. It does in fact actually hurt your opponent when you do land this, correct?
Well, you know, putting a heel or at least the backside of my calf up against somebody is not going to feel great. So it's just really up to where I hit him. You know, a lot of people throw a lot of wasted strikes, jabs, crosses, uppercuts, kicks, and all that stuff. So I don't really feel like I'm doing anything too out of the ordinary. It just looks a bit funny to people.
Can't wait for it. Brian Ebersol fighting Dennis Hallman, UFC 133, now on the pay-per-view because Rich Franklin and Little Nog is off the show. A great opportunity for Brian once again, and we appreciate very much. I knew you were trying to work it out to get on Rogan's podcast, but we'd like to think that we're one step below Rogan's podcast, so this is a pretty good consolation.
Yeah, I haven't been able to get a hold of him on Twitter again. I think he's gotten a little bit busy.
Yes.
So concentrate on training. And like I said, leave the post-fight media fairly well alone from here on out. And yeah, do my talking after the fight when I have some good news.
Luckily for you, we're not that busy over here. So we're.
I appreciate you giving the opportunity, and I look forward to seeing you out in Philly.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time, Brian, and good luck.
Thanks, mate.
All right, there he is, Brian Ebersol, one of the great characters in the world of MMA, joining us. And he is fighting Dennis Hallman at UFC 133. Another guy who is fighting at UFC 133 is Jorge Rivera. He fights Alessio Sakara, or does he? Because everyone is talking and sending me things now, knowing that Jorge Rivera was going to be on the show, that he had just tweeted, Alessio Sakara fight is off. Stay tuned for updates. Perhaps this is the forum for that update. So he is joining us right now. Jorge Rivera, are you there, my friend?
Good, man. What's going on?
It's good to have you on the show. So is this, in fact, true? Is the Alessio Sakara fight off?
Dude, I was in the gym working out this morning, and I got a phone call from my manager, and he was telling me that Sakara had torn his ACL, and he was out. I thought it was a joke at first, you know, and then he was like, nah, I'm dead serious, man. I just couldn't believe it. Wow. So, yeah, it's true. The fight's off again.
So you found out this this piece of news earlier today?
I found out around, I think, like 11:30.
Wow, and are they going to try to find you a replacement?
Yes, it looks like right now we're close to getting a replacement fight. So,
now who?
As I know you'll know.
Who would that opponent? Can you give us a hint? Can you give us maybe a clue or so as to who
it
this might be?
It looks like it's going to be Costas Filippo.
Oh, okay. He was supposed to fight against Natal, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you don't know what's going on there with that one.
No, right now we're just trying to, you know, last minute things happening here and there. And my camp doesn't even know yet. I've been trying to reach my trainers, and you know, they do their own thing right now. Just fighting on a day, so I haven't even had an opportunity to tell my camp.
Wow. Well, we certainly appreciate you stopping by and telling us. How frustrating. I mean, I can't even imagine. Are you just sick of and you know, obviously our thoughts and prayers go out to Sakara, but this is the second time you're supposed to fight him. Of course, you were supposed to fight him at 122. He got sick the day of the fight. That doesn't happen.
Ariel, it's the third time. I was supposed to fight him at 118.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, in Boston.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it just wasn't meant to be. You know what I mean? And like, in all honesty, I've got some family here from Florida last night, and we were just sitting around joking around. They were like, watch this thing get called off the day of the fight against us. Just joking around. So when I got the call today, I couldn't fucking believe it. I was in complete shock.
Wow. But the good news is you are going to at least, it seems like for now, stay on this card, that you're not losing a fight.
Yes. It looks like I'll still be fighting. So that's a good thing, for sure.
And this was supposed to be on the pay-per-view. So are you going to stay on the pay-per-view?
As far as I'm aware, yes.
Wow. Now, what do you know of Costas? If this is your new opponent, do you know anything about him?
I know he trains out of Cerro Longo. I know he was training up for Tough 11, and his last fight was at UFC 128 versus Nick Catone, where he lost the decision. He's a good stand-up fighter. He's got power in both hands. He's got three pro boxing fights where he's won all three of them. He's 7-2 in MMA. And I know Matt Serra. You know, I was on the show with Matt Serra in season 4. I know Matt is a good teacher and a good motivator, so I'm sure this guy will be ready to come to fight.
So you actually do know a lot about him, actually.
Well, you know what I've been able to dig up for the last hour.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, I mean, I went to the computer right away instead of doing research on the guys that had offered me. So, I mean, yeah, that's what I got on them. And for no doubt, I'll be studying them more as the days come.
Now, did they offer you anyone else?
They had a couple names on the board, you know, but I think style-wise, I think that him and I make for a good fight. And that's what I'm interested in doing. So,
does this fight excite? I mean, Sakara is no doubt a bigger name than Costas is. Does it excite you as much? I mean, or do you even need that excitement at this point? You're less than 2 weeks away. You just want to fight.
Yeah, I don't need that excitement, to be honest, Jerry. You know what I mean? It's coming. You know what I mean? I'm sure he'll be pumped now. He's going from the undercard to the main card, and he's fighting a bigger name himself. So, you know, I'm sure he'll come ready to fight. So, and you know, that keeps me on my toes as well, because I know he's going to come in hungry. You know, and honestly, I just want a good fight. You know, I want to give the fans something to cheer about and be excited about. You know, and he's a banger, so that makes for the opportunity to do so.
You said a couple weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, in an interview that you were actually contemplating retirement, that this might in fact be your last fight. Is that still the case right now, or have you changed your mind in the last month?
No, Ariel, honestly, what I was saying was, like, I live my life day to day. You know what I mean? And it's like, if I were to get smashed in this fight, yeah, I'd seriously contemplate it. You know what I mean? If I were to smash him, then I'd take the next fight and keep rolling. You know what I mean? I'm just living my life day to day. I'm not going to make any rash decisions, you know, too far ahead of time. I'll just take it day by day, minute by minute, and see how it goes.
When did you first start thinking that retirement was on the horizon? Were you even thinking about that going into the Bisping fight?
Honestly, I think I thought about it before, you know what I mean, way before the Bisping fight, you know, because it's just the way that my career had been going and the punishment my body takes, you know, and what I want to do with the rest of my life. Fighting is just a short window of my life. It's not my life. You know, it's just a part of my life. You know, I want to be able to do other things in my life after fighting is done, you know, and I have to take that into consideration on everything that I do. You know, I've also got a family. I've got young kids that I have to take care of. I want to be there for them and be cognizant and coherent every single day of my life when I'm with them. You know, I do not want fighting to take away from that part of my life as well. So something that I think about. And I think anybody who's reasonable and has other aspirations in life would think about as well.
When it is all said and done, what would you like to do? What are those things that you have planned for the future?
I want to teach. You know what I mean? I want to open up a school and give back to where I live at and the people that I'm around. And if I can get involved in MMA in other ways, I will. You know, if I can bring other fighters up into it, that'll be great. If I can judge, if I can referee, I'll do that. You know, I truly love this sport. I love it. You know what I mean? And if I can continue to contribute to it one way or the other, I will do that.
I remember talking to you in Australia after the Bisping fight. You know, you were eating breakfast and you're tired. And it seemed as though after everything that happened, you know, the videos and how emotional it was, and then the fight itself and how disappointing that was. Obviously, you had lost and this was a very important fight for you, but you were very down. And I did wonder, you know, how much you poured into this fight and how much, you know, and how drained you were after the fact. Did you even think after that fight that it might be time to go, that it just, you know, that this was the time after pouring all that into it and coming up short?
Yeah, Ariel, there was a lot going on in my life around that fight, to be really honest with you, and it just put things in perspective for me. Like I was saying before, there are other things going on in life other than fighting. You know what I mean? And I thought about the time and energy that I put into that fight, how that thing went down, how the whole ball of wax, you know what I mean? And it was still very fresh and new to me, and I hadn't had a chance to, like, even now, still taking it in and rethinking things over and over. It was just a real fresh wound, and it was something that I didn't even have the time to filter. You know what I mean? But that's life. You pick up the pieces and keep moving. You know what I mean? And I learned from that, and, you know, and it'll make me a better person, a better fighter. And like I said, it's just time to move on and keep going.
If you don't mind me asking, what were the other things that you were dealing with?
Life. Just life. Shit at home. You know what I mean? And sometimes things catch up to you. And that's what's going on. I'm being very honest when I tell you that. I don't want to get too deep into my personal shit.
Right.
But that's what it is.
Now, do you feel as though, were they major distractions that maybe, had they not been happening, you would have been a little more focused, a little more ready for Bisping?
No, Ariel, I don't make excuses. You know what I mean? I knew what I was getting into. I knew what I was getting into when I made those videos. I knew what I was doing when I flew down there. I have no excuses. And I feel like I'm mentally strong enough where I can block everything out and focus 15, 20 minutes or an hour or a day or whatever it is. You know what I mean? So whatever happened in that fight happened, and I make no excuses for anything. You know what I mean? It is what it is.
Have you watched the fight since then?
I only watched it. I watched it once that night, and that's it. I don't care to watch the fight, to be honest with you. Yeah, I lived it.
Yeah. Now, when you did watch it, and obviously you say you watched it that night, so it was all very fresh. Do you still feel as though he threw that knee on purpose?
Yeah, I know he did it on purpose. I know he did it on purpose. You can watch the video. The man sits there. He contemplates it. He throws it. He's going to throw another one until the referee jumps in. You know what I mean? I don't care what he says. I don't care what he says. I don't care what his fans say either. I don't give a fuck. I know. Him and I both know. You mean, and that's another thing. It's like, I could care less to keep beating that fucking drum.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just like, I said what I had to say. He said what he had to say. And we're all, for the most part, fairly educated people. You know what happened. You know the build-up to the fight. You can watch the fight. And you can come to your own conclusions. You know, and I leave it to everybody to come to their own conclusions. Some people say I deserved it and this and that. And that's your opinion. And you're entitled to that. You know, and whatever. That's how you think. I could care less. You know, the people think that it was blatant and disrespectful. That's their opinion, and those are their conclusions, and so be it. You know, this is what happened. These are the results of it. This is what I had to live with. Everything else from now on is garbage. It's just, he say, she say, my opinion, your opinion. It doesn't add up to anything, so I don't really care for it. You know, if it's not going to make a difference, it's just conversation.
I'm curious, though, considering how controversial the ending of the fight was and the spitting and all that, did it sting? Did it bother you a little bit that he then, the next thing that he got from the UFC, aside from the punishment, which apparently was severe, according to Dana White, that he's a coach on Tough? That's a major platform. That's a major, it's a major accomplishment in his career to get that opportunity again. Did it bug you that that's the next thing that he received from the UFC?
We're in the business of making money. You know what I mean? And he's a very controversial figure. He just got through a very controversial fight. People either love him or they hate him. And we're in the business of making money, and people are going to pay money to see a gentleman that they either love or hate. You know, some people are going to pay just because they hate him and they want to see him lose, and other people are going to be on the other opposite of that spectrum. Now, the UFC does good. They make good business decisions, and they make good money. So I'm sure they made the right decision as far as business-wise what's good for the UFC.
Final thing on Bisping, perhaps privately or through managers or whatever, have you guys been able to squash this beef, or is it still just sort of lingering? And I know you say you don't really care, but has there been any attempt to sort of privately, you know, settle whatever differences you might have? I guess not.
Hell no. Okay. Hell no. Fuck a spit on my corner. It's personal.
Right.
You know what I mean? No way. I'm not letting that slide. I would never call up with me trying to apologize. Fuck him.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm thinking maybe he might have reached out.
No way.
All right. I was just curious. You know, maybe things happen in private. I don't know. But I can understand.
No, man.
I can understand.
You know, Ariel, before we made the videos and everything, I let his people know that I was going to make those videos.
Oh, really?
I let him know. I was like, listen, I'm going to get a little personal. I'm coming at him. You know, I don't care what he does, what he says. He can do whatever he wants. You know, just give me the heads up. I'm going to do this. You know, so it wasn't like it totally took him off guard. You know, if he took it personal, I don't care. I'm not his friend. You know, I'm in the business of entertaining people and making money for myself and getting my name out there. I'm not too caught up in what other people are thinking. You know, if I do that, if I'm trying to make everybody else happy, in the long run, I'm going to be unhappy. So what good does that do me? You know, I'm thinking about myself and what's good for me right now. You know, and that's why I did that. You know, and if you took it personal, I don't really care. I don't care.
And those videos were immensely popular online. They put a lot of they helped make a lot of intrigue surrounding the fight and all that stuff. I'm wondering, why didn't you do the same for the Sakara fight, which is obviously not happening now, but in the weeks leading up to
Ariel,
it?
Ariel, you're assuming that we haven't made videos.
Uh-huh. You actually did, and now you're not going to be able to share them?
Yeah, I guess so. You know,
oh,
I mean, and every single opponent will have a different angle. You know what I mean? And that'll come down to personalities and whatnot. You know, but it is what it is.
So, are you guys going to go to the production room now and start making videos about Costas Philippou? Do you have enough dirt on him?
No, and, you know, it got the way it got with Bisping because of the way Bisping is.
Right.
You know what I mean? And psychologically and everything else, we're looking for every advantage we can get. You know, I've never done that before. I'll probably never be that vicious towards anybody else again unless I fight him again. And this time it'll be a lot more personal and it'll be a lot more entertaining, that I can promise you. And, but other than that, everything is done for specific reason and for purposes. You know, and I just knew that going after him in that manner was going to rile him up in a way that, you know, mentally would throw him off. And I think that was shown in the press conference and in the fight itself.
When do you find out whether the Philippou fight is official?
As I speak to you right now, I'm getting text messages and calls on the other line asking me what's up. So as soon as I hang up, you know, I'll probably, within an hour or two.
All right. Well, we're going to let you go because I know it's very busy and hectic over there. I really appreciate you sticking with us here and coming on to do the show, even though...
Hey, I told you in private. I'll say it publicly. I enjoy your show. I enjoy your manner of interviewing. You always ask tough questions to people that most people don't ask. And you do it in a manner that's intelligent. You know what I mean? And I appreciate it. I appreciate your interviews. I appreciate the style that you're interviewing. And I'm grateful to be on your show, so thank you very much.
Oh, it means a lot to me. Thanks, Jorge, and good luck, and we'll see you in Philadelphia in a couple weeks.
All right, man, I'll see you then.
All right, there he is, Jorge Rivera, joining us. Appreciate the words very much from him, and obviously unfortunate news there. If you missed it, Alessio Zaccaro now off. He suffered an injury in training, and now it appears as though Jorge Rivera is going to fight Costas Philippou, who's supposed to fight Rafael Sapo Natal on the undercard, and now he says this fight is going to happen on the pay-per-view. So an unfortunate situation for Rivera, but at least he still gets a fight and a huge opportunity for Mr. Philippou. We're going to go to a caller on the line, right? Yeah, all right, let's go. We have a few minutes before we get to Burt Watson, so let's go to another call. Let's go to line number one, Dave in Maine. And we could you could call Burt in a few minutes. Dave, are you there?
Hey.
Hey, man.
You hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. How are you doing, Ariel?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
I'm living. Hold on, let me turn the volume up.
Okay.
Okay. I get a few questions. I actually wrote down a list.
Wow.
And I actually had these questions like 5, 6, or whenever you had Overeem on, but it would have been rude to ignore him and ask you all these questions.
I agree.
So I guess I want to lead off with the TRT, the interview you did with Dan Henderson.
Yes.
It came out in the interview that he was on it.
Yes.
And I just wanted to know your opinion. How many guys do you think are doing this, or, you know, I'm not really sure what to say.
How many guys do I think are on TRT? That's a hard question to answer. I think obviously there are some who use it. We know that Henderson has been using it, and it's been public for like a year or so. But he's kosher. I mean, he's done everything that he has to do. He claims to have been using it since 07. And he's not doing anything illegal. There are people who actually need this medically, and this is a condition, and they do everything that they need to do. They fill out all the paperwork, and that's cool. There are some who don't do that, and that's why they could be getting in trouble or have gotten in trouble, and that's the issue. So obviously it's a problem, and I suspect from talking to a few fighters off the record, a lot have told me one fighter gave me a ridiculous number, a ridiculous percentage, way above 50%, he said. And that's just one guy. So maybe that's a sample size of his gym. But apparently there are a lot of people who use it, and I think that they need to figure out a way to find out who is abusing this, because that's a PED. That's an advantage and an unfair advantage.
Right. I just found it a little odd that two guys from Team Quest, you know, both have this medical condition.
I can't, what can I say? I mean, Chael, if you're implying Chael, Chael says that he needs it medically, and he actually did do the right things. Towards the end, it got a little crazy there with Nevada saying they didn't tell him and all that, but I think Chael was suspended because he didn't go through the proper routes. He wasn't suspended because he tried to sneak this under someone's nose, and Henderson has never gotten in trouble for it, so... What are you going to do? You can't. It's hard to just point the finger at someone, or anyone when they're, you know, you have to believe that they're telling you the truth. All right?
Okay. Yeah.
One more question.
Also, just real quick on the TRT. When they say normal levels, are they talking, as in Dan Henderson's case, normal levels for a 40-year-old or normal levels for like a 21-year-old? What is considered normal?
I think that's for his age, of course. It has to be for his age.
And, I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, it would be for his age. You can't compare Dan Henderson to an 18-year-old.
All right. Fedor versus Dan Henderson. I was looking at the projected salaries.
Yeah.
And Dan Henderson, $800K, I believe I read, and Fedor was $1.5 million.
Right.
And I think looking back at Fedor's last two salaries, it was somewhere around $400,000. And I'm just wondering, how are they going to make money on this when they're probably not even going to gate what they're going to pay the main event? And do you think Zuffa will continue with Fedor paying out these crazy amounts?
Like I said last week, I think if Fedor loses, I think he's done in Strikeforce. That would be three in a row. And that is obviously a big fight. You know, he was supposed to be in the Grand Prix. He loses. Fighting Henderson is probably the biggest fight they can make for him right now. But I think if he loses, it might be it for him. And we'll ask him that question in Chicago later on this week. And there have been some talks that, you know, there was a deal, perhaps part of the Nick Diaz deal, that they were, you know, helping Showtime pay, because Showtime's involved in this as well. But we'll find out. Until they actually release the salaries, the projected salaries, you can't really go off that. They have to actually release the salaries, and then we'll see. So we'll have to find out after the fight. We appreciate the call, Dave. Thank you very much for staying on the line. We got to go to our next guest.
All right. Thanks for taking my call. I'll ask my other questions next week.
Okay, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Or maybe later on in the show. We go now to our next guest, and a guy who I said earlier in the show, one of the most requested guests in the history of this show. We asked the fans a couple of weeks ago, who do you want to hear from? They said Chael Sonnen, Joe Rogan, BJ Penn. They threw out all these names, and one of the names that they threw out, no surprise to me because he's such a great guy, but I was just surprised how many fans wanted to hear from him. He is Burt Watson, the babysitter to the stars, as Joe Rogan calls him, and he is joining us on the MMA Hour for the first time now. Burt, thank you so much. How are you, my friend?
What's going on, baby?
It is great to hear from you, Bert. One of the most legendary voices in combat sports history. And are you surprised by that you've become such a popular figure in this sport?
I am a little surprised. I'm humbled by it, and on the other hand, I don't find it surprising because I know how knowledgeable MMA fans are, and they know everybody and they know everything about you. And you know, I mean, they know these fighters' grandmama's name, what kind of dog they have. You know, these are very, very knowledgeable fans. So the fact that they know a little bit about me or who I am or what I do, I can understand because they are some knowledgeable fans, baby.
And I'm assuming now when you go to the fights, everyone recognizes you, right?
I'm not a total stranger, but yeah, our fans kind of know. I mean, I got the biggest mouth in the UFC, so I've been told. So I guess they hear that or have heard about it or probably hear me, you know, from the stands fight night. But they kind of know who I am.
What I find to be amazing is that you're almost like a father figure to a lot of these fighters. And I was watching a Rashad Evans video. He was talking about how frustrated he was that, you know, he had a new opponent to deal with, and now he's fighting Ortiz. And he said, I just can't wait to hear, and he hasn't fought for a while. Uh-huh. He can't wait to hear you say, we rolling, baby, all that. And it's just, it made me realize, and I know, I've seen it backstage with my own eyes, and I've heard it, obviously. You are such a part of their routine, and you're almost like their own hype man, and you get them ready for that fight. That's an important responsibility, especially considering how mental this game is. How does that make you feel to know that you're such a big part of these guys' lives and their routine leading up to the fight?
Well, it gives me a sense of satisfaction because that's my goal, baby. You know, it's stepping into that octagon, Ariel, is one heck of a job, and it's one heck of a thing to do. And my main purpose or intention is to see that those guys have a complete comfort level, baby, when they step into that cage. I mean, complete. That they're not worried about tickets, mouthpiece, cups, arguments at home, getting sick, not feeling well, getting nervous, you know, not wanting to fight, having a headache. I like to make sure that those are all the things that those guys don't put on their head, because you know, fighters and guys, when they get ready to step into that cage, you know, MMA, boxing, you know, little things take them to the left or the right. And through my experience in boxing and now MMA, I've kind of learned or realized that little things take these guys to the right or the left. And the reason I became a coordinator is to bridge that gap between the promoter and the fighter, and give that fighter exactly what he needs to get a comfort level so that he has nothing on his head that could take him to the left or the right, because the little things tick these guys off. So when I hear that these guys kind of feel that way, you know, and it motivates them, and I do what I can to get them to their cage, because that's a heck of a walk. That's a heck of a walk for them, and that's a heck of a walk for me. So I try to mentally get them prepared and get myself prepared at the same time, baby.
Now, if there is someone listening to the show who has seen you, sees you at the weigh-ins and all that stuff, but doesn't know exactly what you do, and you do so much, are you able to sort of condense it for us? What is a life, what was a day in the life or a week in the life of Burt Watson when it is fight week and you're doing your duties as the fight coordinator?
Well, as a coordinator, it's my job basically to put together and make sure all the logistical things that the fighters and their camps have to go through during the course of the week are in order, that it's right there for them. Things such as, you know, when they check in, that their rooms are either ready or they know that they have a room, you know, that the registration process is in place for them to register for their license, you know, that they're getting their meal money, they're getting their food money, they're getting their per diem, that they got a workout room, and the workout room is the right temperature, the mats are in there, the mats are clean, the workout equipment's clean. If there's a press conference or a media workout or something, that they've got transportation to and from that. If there's an open workout, they got transportation to and from that. What they need to have for the weigh-in, when the weigh-in, somebody to chase them down during the course of the week to make sure that they're either on weight or making weight or got their butts in that sauna so they do make weight at weigh-in. All the things that prepare them or that they prepare for, Ariel, before coming to get into a fight, I kind of pick that up when they get here, and I carry the ball the rest of the way for them. So it's all of the logistical things. I mean, down to the temperature in the workout rooms, the gloves, the fitting of the gloves, who wraps their hands, how their hands are wrapped, red and blue tape on the top of the glove, the time, the fight time, being exact to them as to not exactly when they'll get in that cage or the octagon, but a roundabout time so they have enough time to warm up. They know how to warm up, when to warm up, where to warm up. And, you know, some of the things that they can and cannot do in the octagon or in the dressing room. Those are just kind of some of the things that I do so that there is absolutely nothing on a fighter's head or the trainer's in the camp's head but getting him to that octagon and him fighting like he knows how to do, baby.
Now, you said that prior to MMA you worked in boxing.
Yes.
What was your first introduction to the world of combat sports? When did you start working in boxing?
I was I started in boxing with Joe Frazier. I was a runner with Joe, and later on in years when everybody else made all the money, I became Joe's manager. And my job was creating situations for him to make money on his name, which was not a hard thing to do because Joe Frazier's name was big enough, but that was my introduction to coordinating because I had to do that. And because of my affiliation with Joe Frazier, a lot of people gave me a shot that they wouldn't give anybody else. So I got a shot with some of the big boys to kind of play around as a coordinator a little bit. I did Kostya Zou and Zab Judah in November, I think it was 2000 or October 2000, at the MGM Grand. Someone came to me and said, listen, there's this guy that's starting this MMA organization, and he's looking to put a group of people together, and I think you're somebody he should talk to. So this friend, a guy by the name of Bernie Dillon, introduced me to Dana White, right there at the fight. It was like at the weigh-in. So we really didn't have a lot of time. You know, and as a coordinator back then, I considered myself, you know, a hired gun, if I could use that term. My thing was, pay me and respect me. You got me, baby. And I'll do the best I can. I'll give you 150. And all Dana said was a handshake and eye-to-eye contact that he was looking to do something and he wanted the right people. And if I was interested, he'll get back to me. About 2 or 3 months later, he got back to me. And my first MMA show was UFC 31 in Atlantic City.
Wow, and you've been with them ever since. Have you ever missed a show?
I missed two. My daughter got married, my son got married. Those were two shows that I had to miss. But other than that, no. I've done every one of them just about, except here recently. You know, this schedule's getting real crazy.
Yeah.
But I like crazy, and it's starting to overlap. So if it's coming from East Coast to West Coast, I can do it. But going from West to East, the time is a little different. They're starting to overlap a little bit now, you know, and, you know, I'm getting a little older, so they're slowing it down for me just a tad, just a little bit.
Yeah, because now, obviously, Zuffa owns Strikeforce, and I remember we were trying to get you on the show a few weeks ago, and you were not going to be home for 7 straight weeks during that crazy stretch between May, June, and July. Is there ever a point where you're like, geez, I just want to chill out, or do you like working at this pace?
The only thing I don't like is packing and unpacking, baby.
Right.
Everything else I've kind of gotten used to, and I don't think about it. Because if I think about it, what you think about, you bring about. So I don't think about the pace or think about getting tired. Because if I did with as much, I mean, we did 7 shows in 8 weeks or 6 and 7 or whatever. If I thought about that pace, I'd be one tired guy. But I don't. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the people around me. I'm having a good time. I'm enjoying life. I love life, you know. And you slow me down, you might stop me.
What were you doing, Burt, before you hooked up with Joe Frazier?
I was in corporate America.
Wow.
I was a salesman, if you can believe that. Something else is a way to run my mouth.
So you were yelling at people, telling them "Let's go, baby," and all that stuff back then.
Oh no!
Okay.
Oh no! I wore a 3-piece suit, a tie, and Brooks Brothers. You know, I sold piece goods to manufacturers of men's suits.
Oh really?
And I worked in the garment district. You know, and I schlepped a lot of stuff around. You know, if that's the correct word, baby.
I like it. Yeah.
And then I got hired by Levi Strauss, and I was the first African-American salesman on that force, and also on the one in Burlington. And, you know, I did that corporate wheel for a minute, and they became corporate and started letting people go, and that scared me. That scared me. When they started letting people go randomly, I said, you know what? I think I'll go pump gas. So I got off the corporate wheel and just kind of fend for myself, and Joe Frazier came along, and it's, you know, the rest just kind of rolled itself right in there. But no, I wasn't a yeller. I wasn't talking about a yeller. I didn't start really yelling "Let's go, baby" until maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe 4 years ago.
Why did you feel the need to do that?
Well, I would do so many shows, and it would constantly, you know, on the road all the time. And at the end of the night, my feet were hurting, baby. I'd wake up the next morning, my legs were numb, my feet were hurting. And you know what? I started paying more money for my shoes and started putting, you know, gel in my shoes, just different things to kind of heal my feet. And, you know, it really didn't work because I move a lot. I move a lot. I move pretty fast, and I'm always perpetual motion. So I got one night, and I was actually – sometimes we'll go to different places, and logistically, those dressing rooms, man, are a killer. Sometimes they're around the corner. Sometimes they're upstairs. Sometimes they're downstairs. Because most venues are not situated for MMA. their dressing rooms are situated for entertainers, stand-up entertainers, not guys that are going to roll around. So I have to be very creative with dressing rooms and where I put them and how I do it. So that had me running up and down all around all night, and my feet were hurting. And one day I came down, and my feet were hurting, and I was just not ready to work. And I started down the hall, and I said, you know what? I'm not running no more. I'm not walking in and out of them dressing rooms no more. I'm going to stand out here, and I'm going to yell at them. And I did. I stood in the hall, and I yelled, you got 50 minutes. You got 40 minutes. You got a dirty 30. You got a 20, Denny, before we roll to the hole. You got five, straight up five. I started yelling that up and down the hall. And when it was time for them to go, that's when I started yelling that it was time to roll. And as time went on, I dressed it up a little bit, got a little better with it, but I just got tired of walking up and down them steps and in and out of dressing rooms. Didn't do me no good in Toronto, but
yeah.
So that was one big arena, but that's how that all came about.
If it's possible, is there one moment that sticks out? I know you get very close to these guys. I know that you go through a lot. It's almost like a roller coaster every week, and there's so many fight weeks now. But is there a moment that sticks out above the rest, boxing, MMA, that was just a little more special than the rest for you?
You know, I can't think of anything more special than the best place for me to watch a fight or enjoy a fight is on the fence, baby. And that's where I stay because I got a special relationship and I love all these guys. So I try not, I remain neutral. I don't watch the fights. I don't look at them because I don't want to see a winner or a loser. A funny instance. I know that I go through every now and then through the dressing rooms, and I'm always checking buckets to make sure guys have what they need in the buckets, don't have ice in the buckets, you know, that there's, you know, no things in there like Vaseline, just different things that I always try to catch and keep up with, and that they got a cup and they got a mouthpiece. And when a fighter goes to the cage, the referee sticks his arm out and checks his mouthpiece, and then hits him in the cup to make sure that he has a cup in. He doesn't hit him. He kind of touches him. Well, I didn't know that. I thought he hit him. And I had a fighter, I won't name him,
okay,
getting ready to go out of the dressing room, and I'm checking him to make sure, and I went to hit him, and I hit him, and he didn't have a cup on.
Ooh.
And he buckled. He went down on his knees. I thought he was kidding, but he wasn't kidding. Because I was moving so fast, and I cracked him, and he went down on his knees.
Oh!
From that point on, I said, "No, I'm not doing that anymore." You know, little instances like that. But you know, I think recently, you know, I got a thrill of my life to meet the President of the United States in a room.
You got to share that story. That's an unbelievable story, and I can't think of anyone in Zuffa that deserved it more than you. It was amazing when we were in Pittsburgh. He was at the hotel. It's a great story, if you don't mind sharing it.
Well, we were there in Pittsburgh, and my room basically was on the first floor, and I'm usually on the low floor because I'm afraid of heights. My room was on the first floor right next to the fitness center. So the night before, the sales manager came to me and said, "Mr. Watson, we got a dignitary that's going to be here in the hotel tomorrow in the fitness center. We want to come and sweep your room tonight." We see a ton of entertainers, man, and you know that because you go to our shows. So you learn to stay out of the way. You learn to do what they ask and get your job done and get out of the way. So I said, fine. They came that night about 6:30, 7 o'clock. Swept my room, and they left. They said, "We're going to be back here tomorrow morning at 7. I said, okay. 5 of 7, they were knocking on my door that next morning. I opened the door. There was a guy standing there with a dog. And I'm looking, and then there was 4 guys behind him with suits on. And I'm looking, and I'm like, you know what? This is not a mayor or a governor. This is a little more than just that. Not really, really, really thinking that it was that big. So they came in, they swept my room, and they went behind the refrigerator, went up all in whatever they did, had me stand by the door. They actually had someone come into the doorway where I was standing, had me face them, And they sent a wand up, you know, just like they do at the airport, up my thigh, under my arm. In the meantime, there was somebody walking behind me going into the fitness center. So I'm standing there, and they tell me to turn around, and they went up and down. And they said, okay, sir, we're good. So I said to the guy who was the head of the Secret Service, I said, listen, I got to go turn that sauna on, but make sure that sauna is on for these fighters or that it's running. He said, okay. He walked out. He walked behind me. The sauna was in the room. Now, the hallway to the room was very small. There were six guys on one side, six on another side, and then one black guy who was a Marine, and I'm a former Marine, so I knew he was Marine, his uniform, and he was a major, and he's standing in front of the door. So I looked back at the guy behind me. I said, can I go in there? The guy said, okay. I walked between the Secret Service. The guy at the door moved out of the way. I walked in the room. I kind of heard this motion a little bit. I walked around a column, and there he was, the President of the United States, sitting on a bike, pedaling, reading in the newspaper. And I freaked. I couldn't move. I didn't expect to see him. I knew there was somebody in there, but him, I did not know or expect to see him sitting in there. And there was nobody else in there. I mean, in terms of, you know, like a lot of other people who were people, you know, working the treadmill, he was sitting on the bike by himself, pedaling, reading the newspaper. And I looked at him, and I just kind of stuck my hand out, and I said, what's up? I couldn't think of anything else to say. He said, how are you? I said, right now, sir, I'm honored. He said, no, I'm honored. Nice to meet you. And I turned around, and I slowly walked out of there like I had stuff in my pants. I couldn't believe that had just happened. I walked out, walked up the hall, looked back, the Secret Service standing, not even looking at me. And I walked up the hall, man, and I said, did that just happen to me? Did I just walk out of that room with the President of the United States? First person I called, baby, was my mom. And she said, my mom's Jamaican. She said, for true? I said, yeah, Ma, for true, I met him. She said, did you tell him I said hi? I said, no, Ma, I didn't tell him. And I don't think I can get back in there to try it again. So I would have to send him that on a mail.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, from that point on, I had goosebumps. I had goosebumps. I couldn't believe it. And it just kind of, it was one experience that I will never forget.
I'm sure you've had many. Have you ever considered writing a book? I think a lot of people would be interested to know what really goes on behind the scenes, and your journey is a very interesting one.
Well, I'm not a writer. And a lot of stuff I've forgotten, you know. And yeah, if the opportunity presented itself and somebody else said, I'm going to make that happen for you, yeah. But myself, I've gone so far now, boss, in my career that, you know, a lot of stuff I forgot. I didn't. Something other than the president. When Nelson Mandela got out of jail in 1986 or 7, I think, he got out. One of his first visits was to the United Nations. He wanted to meet Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. They called our office and said he wanted them. Long story short, Joe and I got in the car the next day. We went up to the United Nations. They took us downstairs in the tunnel into this area where the dignitaries are, took us in there. And we took his belt, the belt that he won the second time when he fought Muhammad March 8th, 1971 in Madison Square Garden at 10:35. We took that belt and gave that belt to Mandela, and I put it around his waist.
Wow.
It was just us down there. That was the biggest dignitary I had ever met. Now, I met Mandela again maybe 6 years after. Didn't know who I was. But he remembered that incident when I told him about that belt. He hugged me like he knew me all his life because he remembered that belt. He's got it.
Wow. Were you with Joe, by the way, on March 8th when he beat Ali for the first time?
Huh?
Were you with Joe at the Garden?
I was a runner, kind of like just somebody that had part-time work. I was not a major part of the, you know, his entourage or a major part of his team or anything. No, But I was a runner. I was just as much a fan as anybody else. But never realizing that that whole thing was going to be history. It's like now. You know, what we're doing now in this sport, right, all of this is going to be history one day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be a part of it. You know, and we didn't ask for this. History just throws itself at you. You know, Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, BJ Penn, Matt Hughes, Matt Serra, you know, all these guys, George St. Pierre. One day, you know, I'm going to look back at this and it's going to be, damn, I was there.
And
I was in it, baby.
And you're a part of history again, right? Because you're working on the Strikeforce shows now. How surreal is that? You're working at the one in Chicago with Fedor, which is surreal in itself that it's a Zuffa show, in a sense. How weird was that to now have to work for the enemy, so to speak?
You know what? It was, for me, it was nothing. It was no transition because we had WEC, and when they brought on the WEC, all they did with me was they added shows. So, you know, I couldn't really miss a beat. I can't, you know, I can't pay attention to that. I got to keep on going and knowing I got new guys. And the only thing I worry about is getting them guys in with me and getting them used to the process, my process and how we do things, you know, and getting them to know that I respect them and getting them to respect me. That's top first for me. And so the amount of shows when WEC merged with the UFC, and they brought on Strikeforce, all they did was just replace the shows that they did for WEC. Maybe a couple more shows, but it's been the same. So, but I get to see different fighters, like you said, Fedor, and, you know, work again with the Diaz, with both Diaz brothers. And, you know, it's Dan Henderson.
Right.
Yeah, I realize the magnitude of these guys. I realize how special they are. I realize how much of a part of history they're going to be because this sport has grown bigger than anything I've ever seen in my lifetime. You know, and I've done shows with Tyson and De La Hoya and Sugar Ray Leonard, Chavez. I've never been to a weigh-in that had 6,000 or 7,000 people. That gives me goosebumps, baby.
How many more years do you want to do this?
Well, I just turned 62.
Happy birthday.
I want 10 more years. I want 10 good more years, Dana. You hear this? I want 10 more good ones. And I think as long as I, you know, keep it going and stay current and keep respecting what I do and myself in this job, you know, I got 10 more. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it much more than that. You know, when I get to be 73, 74, yeah, I don't want to be hustling like this and screaming like this, and, you know, maybe short-circuiting myself.
I don't blame you. we've taken up a lot of your time, Bern. We appreciate it very much. I have to ask you one last thing, and I don't mind if you say no, but we have a lot of people on Twitter asking me. And by the way, you're not on Twitter, right? Because we have people asking me that.
No.
Okay.
I don't know how to do that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are asking if you can give us a wee rollin'. Is that possible, or are there people sleeping in your hotel room? Can you give us a taste?
I think I could do that. I think I can do that as long as everybody's listening to your show. This is just one of the things that I do when these guys, just imagine the guy standing in the workout room, standing in the dressing room ready to go for a fight and don't know what time it goes. He's got 50 minutes to go, baby. He's got a 40. He's got a dirty 30 before we roll to that hole, baby. You got 20 minutes before we roll to that hole. All right, baby, it's time to roll. It's time to roll, baby. We roll out. Yeah.
Unbelievable. One of the great, great legends of this sport. A true legend. A class act. One of the most requested guests we've ever had. Thank you so much, Bird. This is a huge honor for me.
Man. Always my pleasure to see you and talk to you, baby.
Thank you so much. And have a good time out there and a great week in Chicago. And we'll see you in a couple of days. Thanks again. A huge honor.
Thank you to your fans, baby.
Yes, we will. Thank you. There he is, Bird Watson, saying goodbye. And that might be a new addition to our intro, Josh.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, exactly. Lenny Hart might have some company. All right, we went a little extra with Mr. Burt Watson, but we'll get Mike Chiappetta on the line now, and in around 12 minutes, we'll be joined by BJ Penn before we say goodbye. Great, great stuff there from Burt. What a character he is. Really, really great guy, and I've never heard someone say a bad thing about him. And I'm sure if you might not know the name Burt Watson, you've definitely seen him at a UFC weigh-in or around the cage or anything like that. You definitely, if you're a UFC fan, you've definitely seen Burt Watson. So we appreciate him stopping by. We'll be joined by Mike Chiappetta. Is he joining us? There he is. Joining us. Ooh, wearing some plaid, Mike Chiappetta. Stealing my look. I like it. How are you, Mike? Sorry about that.
Well, I watched the beginning of the show. I saw you weren't wearing any plaid, so I went for it.
We apologize for the delay. Burt was just on a roll there.
Yeah, man. Burt's an entertaining dude, so I wasn't upset. I was listening to him, and you know, Burt. It's Burt, man.
It is Burt. All right, lots to talk to you about, and now we have sort of a shortened version of the segment. Want to get your take first on this Alistair Overeem situation. Overeem on our show last week said that obviously he felt threatened. He felt like he was being disrespected. A few hours later, he's out of the tournament. Dana says it's because of the toe. Overeem seems to think it's because they're pushing him and they're making him fight when he didn't agree to fight. He was supposed to fight in October, he says. Now it's September. What's your take on this situation, and what does this say about the future of Alistair Overeem in Zuffa?
Well, I think this is one of those situations where there's a little bit of truth to both sides, but you also have to read between the lines. And I think Overeem's in a situation here where he is coming up on his last fight, last contracted fight, and certainly he's in a position where he wants to, you know, either get a raise or get a longer term contract or whatever the case may be. You know, with the way the MMA world is these days, there's not a lot of places to go and get big contracts. I think that's one of the reasons we've heard a lot about his boxing aspirations and things of that nature. But, you know, and the other thing is too, is with, you know, the sort of chaos that went on with Strikeforce being bought by Zuffa and the issue with the dates of shows being pushed back, it really messed with the whole tournament. So I think there is some legitimate reason to believe that the dates were, you know, he was told one thing and then it was changed. So, you know, he went on vacation. He's not quite ready. On the other hand, I think, you know, he is trying to play up his negotiating power and the fact that he has some other options and, you know, that he doesn't want to be kind of bullied into fighting or taking their terms. So I think both sides are kind of digging in their heels a little bit, but at the same time, there is a legitimate injury and other things.
Both you and I talked to Dana about this. What's your take? Do you think Alistair fights again for Zuffa?
I think he will, just because of the fact that there aren't a whole lot of other places for him to go. You know, I think shortly after this happened, his management released a statement saying that he sort of regretted some of the things that he said on the show with you, and maybe he was a little too harsh in what he said. So I think there's already a little bit of pullback and realization that there are limited outlets for him. You know, even if he's throwing out this idea of fighting one of the Klitschkos, the likelihood of it happening is very low. So that payday is unlikely to come his way. Obviously, he can do kickboxing. That's not a problem. He can do that. But is he going to make the same money that he'd be making, you know, as a big MMA star in a company like Strikeforce or the UFC? Probably not. So I think he will end up back, you know, in Strikeforce or the UFC at some point soon.
Now, speaking of Strikeforce, they return this Saturday, Hoffman Estates, Fedor Emelianenko against Dan Henderson. And I have to say, and I think I've said it on this show, I think the only reason why, or one of the few reasons why we are getting this fight, is because of you. Because after Dan Henderson's win over Fei Zhao, you wrote a column on our site, MMAfighting.com, saying that Henderson should fight Fedor next. And I was not hearing any talk about this fight. You write that column, and all of a sudden, everyone's like, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. How much credit are you actually taking for this fight, Mike?
Well, I mean,
I'm giving you a lot.
I appreciate that. You know, I get lucky every now and again, and every once in a while I actually have a good idea. I don't know that this was really, you know, my original idea. I mean, when Dan went to sign with Strikeforce, he did talk about wanting to fight Fedor at some point. I just felt like, given the timing of what was going on in their respective careers, that if it was ever going to happen, this should be it. You know, I felt that way about other matchups in the past. that haven't happened. This happened to be one of the times where, you know, I think everything kind of came together at the right time, and you have, you know, two legends of the sport, and both in interesting phases of their careers, and what could happen in the future. So it just came together.
There was some talk, and Dan confirmed this to us when we talked to him in Vegas earlier this month. This is the last fight on his contract, on a Strikeforce contract. There was some talk that the loser of this bout is out. I really can't see, if Henderson loses, I can't see Zuffa getting rid of him. I just think that he's still a big name. There's still some big fights for him, especially now that he's part of Zuffa again in the UFC light heavyweight division. But if Fedor loses, that would be his third in a row. Considering his price tag, considering the M1 stuff, I have to think that that might be it for him. Would you agree?
Yes, I do agree with that. The only question I had about that was Fedor's contract, and when they completed an extension last year, if he had a clause in his contract where he could not be cut. I checked with a couple sources, and they said no, he does not have that sort of clause, so he can be cut if he loses. He could have been cut after his last loss, honestly. So I think three in a row, given the money that they're paying to him, and if he loses three in a row, his kind of diminished role as a draw and a main event guy, I think it's very likely that he would either be cut, or they would say, you know, if you want to renegotiate with us to stay on at a big discount, you know, we'll consider that, but otherwise we'll be cut. I think the same could be true for Dan Henderson, though. I disagree with you, or that I think if he does lose and he closes out his contract on a loss, you know, Zuffa and the powers that be there are in a position of bargaining power with him, and it's the same situation as Overeem. You know, there's just not a lot of places for him to go. So I think it could be a tough situation for the loser of this fight.
Who's your pick?
I'm still in the process of making a pick, but I think my gut is to take Fedor, just because, you know, the size differential. I think he's got to be as hungry as he's ever been in his career. Looking back into his last loss, I don't think he fought particularly badly. In the first round, it was actually very close against a guy that's huge and, you know, outweighed him by 40 to 50 pounds and is a very good striker. He wasn't really overmatched that much in the first round. The second round, clearly, he was, once he got taken down, mostly because of the size. So I don't think Henderson has a lot in common with Bigfoot Silva in that regard. So I think this is going to be a fight where he does do well on the stand-up. If the fight goes to the ground, we've seen he's a great submission guy. Henderson, at times, has had some trouble with submission guys. So really, I think this is a fight that Henderson has to win standing up. If it goes to the ground, I think Fedor has the edge.
But you're not actually going to pick a winner.
I'm going to pick Fedor. I will pick Fedor. I think he's going to snap the two-fight losing streak. And but, you know, would I bet my house on it? No, I would not.
By the way, what do you do with him after that? I know that there's a lot that has to happen. But in your mind, does the UFC then revisit trying to sign him and bring him over? Or do you think they keep him in Strikeforce?
No, I think you keep him in Strikeforce. You know, one of the interesting parts of this whole Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix is they stacked one side of the Grand Prix with Fedor, with Alistair Overeem, and with Werdum. And the reason they did that is because they felt they were going to get, you know, a matchup with at least two of these three guys. And what happened? I mean, we had all this madness and craziness, and it never happened. So you have two guys out there that Fedor could potentially fight. You could have the Werdum rematch coming off a loss. Overeem's now kind of free, and he's kind of just got to wait for the rest of this tournament to play out, because he said he would be around to fight in October. He'd be healthy and have a full camp. Well, maybe they'd say, you know what, while Overeem is waiting, why sit around and make him wait? We can do the fight with Fedor. I know it would be weird to have your champion fight a non-title fight. That's probably what you're going to say.
No, I like it.
Throwing stuff out there.
I like it. Let's be honest, that title doesn't mean much these days. He's defended it once in, like, what, 3 years or so? So I actually like that idea. I didn't think of that. A good idea, and that's why we have you on the show, Mike. Second good idea. I'm sorry it's so short, but you can blame Burt Watson for that. That was a great story about President Obama. But we will talk to you next week, and you are castless, right? So we'll right?
I'm castless, man. I'm improving little by little here. I can't wait to get back on the active roster.
Yes, well, that will be next week, UFC 133 in Philadelphia. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you then.
All right, Ariel. Take care.
There he is, Mike Chiappetta, joining us. MMA Fighting Zone, and the guy who really deserves all the credit for making the Fedor versus Hendo fight. One more guest to go, and he is Obviously, the legend, the prodigy himself, BJ Penn, who will be fighting Carlos Condit, UFC 137, in October. And as I mentioned, if you're joining us late, it's a bit of a shorter version of the MMA Hour because I have to go pick up my visa to go to Brazil. So that's why we're ending a little early, but we save the best for last. Joining us now once again on the show, the prodigy, joining us from Hilo, Hawaii, BJ Penn. BJ, how are you, my friend?
How's it going, Ariel? How you doing, man? I'm all right.
It's great to have you on the show, and I know it's very early over there, so thank you very much. Did you have to wake up early to join us, or are you up already?
Hey, anything for you, Ariel. Anything for you.
Thank you so much. All right, well, so much to talk to you about. That's why we wanted to have you on the show. First things first, you are fighting Carlos Condit at UFC 137, correct?
Yes, I am.
Now, it seemed as though for a minute there, you and John Fitch going back and forth on Twitter, he tried to get the fight, you were interested in it. Why didn't the fight actually happen, the rematch, you versus Fitch?
Well, one, I think John Fitch was saying he could be ready in October, but I don't believe he could, or I don't believe at the end of the day he could prove it to the UFC. I know that we tried to contact Joe Silva for the fight. Joe Silva kind of actually stopped returning our calls after a while. I think he just didn't want to do that fight. It's either he didn't want to do that fight or he knew that Fitch wasn't going to be ready anyway. And I don't know what Fitch is thinking sometimes. I mean, I know he has to sit down with a shoulder injury. I mean, all he has to keep doing is go back and keep winning fights and keep doing his thing, and he'll find himself in a championship fight. So it was just kind of weird that he was trying to lobby for the fight when he couldn't do the fight anyway.
Does this fight, the fight against Carlos Condit, considering how good he's looked in his last couple fights, does it interest you more than fighting Fitch for a second time?
No, you don't. You know what? Either one. It's either one for me. You know, Condit has definitely looked great his last few fights. And I always thought Carlos was a good guy. He's very well-rounded, great stand-up, great on the ground, you know. So he's good at whatever he's good at. And John Fitch, we all know what he does. And, you know, same thing. Whichever one I would have had to fight would have been perfect for me.
Now, after Carlos Condit's last fight, it seemed as though he had secured the number one contender spot, and everyone was very excited about that. He said he wanted to fight before... didn't have to want to wait for the winner of GSP versus Nick Diaz. Is that the same case for you here? If you beat Carlos Condit, are you the number one contender?
You know what? I don't even want to open my mouth. You know, I just want to get ready to fight Carlos Condit. Dana knows what he's doing. Dana knows what fights the fans want to see. You know, Dana knows what fights make the most sense and what fights are going to be the most exciting. You know, so the UFC takes all those considerations, you know, into matchmaking, and they do their thing.
Are you implying, BJ, that in the past you've gotten in trouble for opening your mouth?
Oh, nah. I mean, of course, I always get in trouble for opening my mouth, but you know, it's just, you know, they're doing their thing. I kind of, you know, I've been here for a while, and I'm just going to lay back and let the UFC do their thing. You know, they want me to fight John Fitch. You know, I got no problem fighting John Fitch. Want me to fight Carlos Condit, let's do it.
What do you make of Nick Diaz getting a shot coming from Strikeforce to fight for the title against GSP? Do you think that's fair?
I definitely think that's fair. You know, he was a champion in Strikeforce, and he wasn't just any champion. You know, he was a top guy. I mean, he was finishing all his opponents, and the fans want to see it. You know, people want to see it. You know, I want to see it. It's going to be a great fight.
Now, the other thing that we wanted to talk to you about, obviously, and this is something you've been very vocal about, but the whole Nate Marquardt situation and this issue of TRT, testosterone replacement therapy in MMA, guys have used it. Obviously, Marquardt was in trouble, fired from the UFC, now signed with Bama. You were going back and forth with him over Twitter. What's your take on TRT, in case someone's missed this? Do you feel as though this is a performance-enhancing drug, that guys are abusing this, they don't really need it, they're using this as an excuse to up their levels and gain an advantage on their opponents?
I think everyone is really of the same opinion as I am, if they want to admit it or not. But stuff like this, I mean, this isn't easy to talk about. You know, this is tough. I mean, we're talking about friends and colleagues of mine that, you know, they look at me and they hear me say all these things and they look at me and they're like, you know, you're the only guy that doesn't do it, right? And I'm like, I know, or whatever, this and that. But, you know, I mean, it's a catch-22 for me because I believe so strongly in you know, the fair play and all these things. And on the other side, I, you know, it's like people you've known in the whole sport, people you look up to, I mean, legends of the sport, and all people are, you know, they've been involved with stuff like that. But, you know, I guess maybe I shouldn't be so outspoken because I have so many friends and so many colleagues and so many people I respect in this sport that, you know, that have probably gotten involved with stuff like TRT or the hormone replacement. You know what? This whole thing was just actually a great education for me. I didn't know actually how easy it was. And the testosterone and then you can do the HGH, put the hormones in. And, you know, it's simple to do. It's simple to get by. And, you know, when I trained for a fight, I would say in the last few years, my biggest hindrance was me always overtraining. Now, when you overtrain, your testosterone drops, your hormones drop. And that's why sometimes when you see me get in the ring, sometimes maybe I messed up and it's hit or miss. Maybe I'm awesome. I timed my peak perfect. Maybe I totally missed my peak and I'm on a downward slide and I'm on a downward slope and I have to wait a whole nother week for my levels to build back up. Or I just call it my chi, you know, your strength. I don't really think about it in the Western term, but you know, when you want to do something, your chi's there and your chi's strong. And when your chi's down, you know, you feel weak. And, you know, I'm sure it's an easy way out to do all the testosterone and stuff. But I just couldn't see myself doing it.
In your opinion, what percentage of guys, can you even put a number? How many guys are actually doing this stuff? Have you been able to learn a little more, ask around and see how many guys are actually abusing this?
You know, I don't have to ask around. I've been in the UFC for 10 years. I know who's doing what, you know, I've always known. I mean, after looking after the Marquardt situation, I didn't realize how easy it could be that they could just do their levels and boost their levels up and then claim they're being fair by testing with lower levels on the day of the fight. I mean, that just blew me away. You know, I couldn't believe that you could just hit the, because that's the hard part of the training camp. When you're training 2 weeks in, 3 weeks in, your body's starting to become sore. You're depressed. You're everything. You're losing your sparring. All these things are going on, you know, but that's when you got to be a man. That's when you got to tough it out. And that's when you got to be strong mentally, you know. And at the end of the day, no matter what happens, win, lose, draw, you know, you give it your honest, best effort.
You say you've been clean your whole career. Was there ever a point you were injured, you were preparing for a big fight, someone around you came up to you and said, you take this, you'll feel healthy, you'll feel even better than you usually do? Has everyone ever tried to convince you that going this route would help your career?
Many times. Many coaches, people know around the sport. Many times.
And you always said no?
Huh?
And you always said no?
I always said no. I always believed that technique was what it was all about. I always believed that. That's why I always would take on the bigger challenges. That's what jiu-jitsu is about. That's why they have the absolute division. From when you're a white belt in jiu-jitsu, you're already practicing wrestling with bigger people. You know, I always believed it was in the technique. I always believed the needle wasn't the answer. I always believed that. I still believe that till today.
And over Twitter, I mean, were you serious about wanting to fight Nate?
I mean, you know what? As soon as I seen on the primetime a couple years ago how Nate was talking about me, that he could knock me out and this and that, or that GSP was going to knock me out and that I was a crybaby for complaining about anything, you know what I mean? I kind of had a personal dislike for Nate for a while, but, you know, he's over there sitting doing interviews saying I'm just a crybaby about people cheating and this and that, and here he is, you know, doing his thing. Of course I'm serious about fighting Nate.
All right. Did you come to the UFC and say that you wanted this fight, or is it just really because you got other fish to fry
now? Well, you know what? Well, you know what was also a personal issue with the Nate issue was I was supposed to fight the winner of Rick Story and Marquardt because Condit didn't fight yet. Fitch was out.
Right.
I was waiting to fight the winner of Marquardt and Story, and I was kind of hoping it was Marquardt. You know, I'm like, oh, this would be perfect. And me and Marquardt at 170, great fight for the fans. you know, this would be awesome. I thought Marquardt would have done well. I think Story was kind of his body wasn't peaking like it wasn't the Thiago Alves fight. I think he kind of got beat to the punch all night long. But Brenneman did a great job. Don't want to take anything away from him. But I think if that Rick Story would have went in against Marquardt, Marquardt would have cleaned him up.
When we had you on the show, BJ, a few months ago, you were obviously talking about your shoulder. You had to pull out of the Fitch rematch. You didn't have to get surgery, right?
No. I opted out of the surgery and just kept the rigorous rehabilitation.
Okay, and how's it feeling now?
It's definitely getting better and better, and you know I can train at 100%. You know, I just constantly I'm always taking care of it.
And what about the retirement talk? Have you put that on ice, or are you over that now? Because after the 127 fight, you actually surprised a lot of us saying that you're thinking about this and you're considering it.
You know, I think I was just at a down moment right there because I really believe in my heart that I can beat John Fitch, and I was just kind of embarrassed how the fight ended up. And maybe I was just thinking some negative thoughts at the time, but. You know, I'd love to come in and fight all the best guys, and you know, maybe do something in the welterweight division. I think I could be pretty close, maybe in the next two or three fights. And you know, and if I could get a shot to come back in the lightweight division before I walked away, that'd be awesome.
So you're not done at 155 either, right?
No, I'd love to fight there again.
I want to ask you about your brother, your younger brother, Reagan. He's going to make his MMA debut later on in August at the Pro Elite Show. And a lot of people are telling us that he is a bigger prodigy than the prodigy himself. And what's your thoughts on your brother making his debut?
Oh, I think he's going to do great. You know, he's going to be fine. You know, hopefully there's not too much pressure on, you know, for him. But, you know, he's got to train hard and do what he's supposed to do. So, we'll see. I'm excited that, you know, this will give him something to do for, you know, this will keep him busy. So I'd like to see him take up MMA serious.
Why did it take him so long to actually make his debut? He's 28, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think he's 29, actually. Oh. I don't know. You know, that's the question we got to ask him. You know what? He's actually been doing BJPenn.com and He's been a computer guy this whole time. I don't know if he wants to do it once or if he wants to get serious about it. You know, so that's on him. I think he's still deciding. He's going to try it out a couple of times and see if he likes it.
And what kind of buzz is there in Hawaii? You said there's a lot of pressure on him. Is there a lot of buzz to see a new Penn fight in the state?
I mean, people are definitely talking about it. You know, people ask me wherever I go because I was just in Oahu last week and everybody was asking me every day, so I definitely think, you know, people want to see.
And what's the update on the UFC coming to Hawaii? They've sort of flirted with the idea about doing an open-air show at Aloha Stadium, and it seems as though the market is starting to come back. Have they told you that they plan on coming there, perhaps, in the next year or so?
I think they haven't told me anything personally. I know they've had some meetings, actually, with the governor of Hawaii. I don't know if by conference call or what, but I'm pretty sure they had some meetings. And I think if they could put a good card together and they had the right fights at the right time, I think they'd come down.
All right. The final thing, BJ, before I let you go, what were you doing with Derrick Rose last week? I saw a picture of you guys hanging out and some other sports stars. What's going on there?
You know, I don't know if we're supposed to say exactly what we were doing, but we were filming a commercial.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I don't think we can say what it was for or any of that stuff.
With some big names.
Yeah, Derrick Rose and Adrian Peterson. I called my friend because I don't watch as much. I was like, Derrick Rose? It's Derrick Rose. They're like, he's the best right now in the NBA. They go, like, about Adrian Peterson? My friend said, what? You're going to meet him? The best running back in the NFL.
Yeah, Derrick Rose is the MVP of the league last year. And like you said, but you can't tell us what it's for.
Yeah, I don't think I can.
But you'll tell us first, right? When you can.
You guys will see it first.
All right, BJ. Thanks for the time. Really appreciate this, especially because it's so early over there. And cannot wait for that fight, UFC 137, BJ Penn versus Carlos Condit. Always a pleasure, BJ. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ariel. You have a good one.
You too. Take care. Mahalo. There he is, BJ Penn joining us on the line. Thank you so much to him. Check him out at BJPenn.com. Just a couple of minutes left. Let's go to a few phone calls. I think there are people who wanted to talk to BJ, but we had to let him go because it was so early over there. So let's see if anyone wants to talk to me before we go and do this whole visa thing. Let's go to line Two or one? Two. Nathan. Nathan, are you there?
Two or one?
Is this Nathan in Canada?
Nathan, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, who's this?
Nathan.
What up, buddy?
Hey, I just, yeah, it was a question for BJ. I don't know. I remember after the UFC 94, he said he never wanted to fight under the Nevada State Athletic Commission again. I just, yeah, I was wondering what gave him the change of heart.
That's a great question. Should have asked him that one.
Yeah.
We'll ask him that when we see him over in, when we see him over in Vegas for the fight. But that is a great question.
Just a quick question for you. Do you know the venue is Mandalay Bay? Is that like a concrete venue for 137?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. All right, perfect. Thanks for your time there, Ariel.
Thanks, Dave. Where are you calling from?
Kamloops, BC,
oh,
Canada.
I love that. Nice. The Blazers over there.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, man. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, have a good one, Ariel.
All right, buddy. Want to say also that the UFC is telling us that Costas Costantinos, that's his full name, Costantinos Philippou versus Jorge Rivera is in fact on, and that is official for UFC 133. And for all you UK fans out there, tickets for UFC 138, which is going down in Birmingham, England, go on sale in late August. I believe a lot of fans have been inquiring about that. That's Mark Munoz versus Chris Leben, a 5-round fight, the first main event in UFC history, which will go 5 rounds. That is not a title fight. I probably didn't say that correctly. First non-title 5-round UFC main event. That's Chris Leben versus Mark Munoz. Also, Hainan Barao against Brad Pickett, England's own. So that's the UFC's return to England. Finally, they get that. And you know what's weird? Wow. I just remembered I had a dream on Saturday. Wow, this is just coming to me right now, Josh. This is breaking news. I had a dream on Saturday that Strikeforce was holding an event in London, and we were at a big press conference, and the Big Ben was there, and it was weird, and all the fans were excited, and we were like, yeah, you see the UFC, the Zuffa, they like, it just hit me right now. Isn't that amazing? Amazing, right, Josh?
Yeah, quite amazing.
Yeah. All right, let's go to one last phone call. Is there anyone else? One last one. All right. I don't see him, but let's... Well, you tell me what his name is.
We don't know his name.
All right. Hello. You're on the line. MMA Hour, are you there?
Hello. I'm Chase from Georgia.
Hey, it's my old friend Chase. You said Chase or Trace?
Chase.
Chase, what's up, buddy? The guy who has no school on Mondays, right?
Yeah.
How are you, my friend?
Good.
How's everything? Yeah? Living large?
Yeah.
All right. What's up? What's on your mind?
I wanted your picks for Strikeforce, Fedor versus Henderson.
All right, let's go through it. Main event, Fedor, Henderson. I'm going with Dan Henderson. Who are you going with?
How?
Oh, now you asked me for the how? Decision.
Okay.
All right. Co-main event, Marlus Kunin versus Misha Tate. That is a tough one. I'm going to go, tough. I'm going to go with Marlus Kunin. Who are you picking?
Okay.
All right. Let's go with Tyron Woodley versus Paul Daly. I got to go with Woodley on this one. Right?
Right, I agree.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Tarek Saffiedin over Scott Smith.
So am I.
Nice. And I'm going to go with Tim Kennedy, Robbie Lawler is a tough one. I'm going to go with Tim Kennedy over Robbie Lawler.
I agree, and I have one last question.
All right.
Do you think if Tito Ortiz beats Rashad Evans, he'll get a title shot?
I don't think so. I think...
one more win after that?
Yeah, I think one more. There's a lot of money to be made with Tito Ortiz, especially considering how much money he earns, but
yeah.
I think he needs one more win.
It'd be real profitable if he fought if he got another title fight.
It would be huge. Tito Ortiz versus John Jones. If he beats Rashad convincingly, never say never in the UFC. A lot of crazy things have happened in the past.
Yeah.
But I will say that they'll probably give him another shot. You know,
based on the fact that he went 5 fights without winning.
Exactly, and he beat Bader, which is a good win, especially considering how he did it. If he stops Evans, then maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say,
like, if he knocked him out in the first round or something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I'm going to say maybe one more.
Okay. Thank you.
Great to hear from you. I love your accent, by the way.
Thank you.
All right. There he is. My good buddy Chase. All right. We are done for the day. And I will say that next week, Josh, you can hit the music. Next week in studio, we are going to be joined by Tap Out's own Skyscrape and Punkass joining us in studio for the first time. So stay tuned for that in a couple weeks. We're working on some other guests for a couple weeks from now, but that is exciting news. So that's going on next week here on the MMA Hour. Same time, same length. We'll go 2 hours. Want to thank BJ Penn for stopping by. Check him out on bjpenn.com and twitter.com/bjpenn.com, bjpenn.com. Also want to thank Mike Chiappetta. Want to thank Burt Watson stopping by. You can see him at Strike Force Fader versus Hendo, where you're going to Hoffman Estates in a couple of days. Beautiful Hoffman Estates. There's nothing to do there, but I guess watch and talk about some good fights. And it is a good card, probably one of the better Strike Force cards. I wish King Mo versus Haj Gracie was still on that card, because I love that fight, but we'll have to wait for September for that one. Also want to thank Jorge Rivera for stopping by, and thank you to him for breaking the news that he is now fighting Costas Philippou at UFC 133. UFC confirmed that with us just a few minutes ago. And also Brian Ebersole for stopping by to talk about his fight with Dennis Hallman. And as he mentioned, you could go on MiddleEasy.com to vote on his chest hair design for UFC 133. As I mentioned, Strikeforce going on this Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Pacific on Showtime. Check that out. We'll be back here next week for Tap Out, or for a discussion with the Tap Out guys, Punkass, Skyscrape. We will see you then. Peace. I'm out of here.